to provide us this platform, as we had a chance first time this year in Dayton, Ohio. And as you can see, our team here of a total of five, including our chief of staff, so I have to be very careful what I'm saying and what I'm not saying. We are from the Joint Air Power Competence Center, which is one of around 20, meanwhile, centers of excellence, which are sponsored by different combinations of NATO member states. And of course, one of our tasks is to develop and run projects, and this is one of the projects. It's called Command Control Leadership Competence Improvement. But what I'm not going to do today is to elaborate on that model, because you will have a chance to experience in the afternoon and the evening what it's all about. But I, of course, thankfully jumped on the topic set by Phil by saying, don't lecture, play. And I hope I'm not carrying old to Athens, or as you guys say on this island, cold to Newcastle, if I'm right. So we would like to put a little focus on why is it better to play than to lecture when it comes to improve the competence of commanders, decision makers, and guys responsible for military operations in particular. But this model is usable also for non-military audiences. But the first question is, of course, how to start. And 16 years from now, this place will celebrate its 200th anniversary. So there's a lot of history. So why not starting with history and the lessons you can take from it? And here's a set of three statements, which I think illustrates that you can derive a lot of that if you know what these three guys are. If you're not, it might rouse your curiosity. Say, what is this guy Shackleton? Who knows Shackleton outside this island? When he came back in 1916 from the Antarctica, he was the first time he noticed that there was a great war running on, because at that time there was no mobile phones and satellites and so on. So that is also a lesson you can take. And of course, when I met Matt Caffrey first time in the last century, close to it, 1998, and then we invited him to Hamburg to the academy, and he gave his briefing on the history of wargaming, and he always quotes or names those two long-haired revolutionaries. The one is the young Napoleon, who when he became older no longer was long-haired, and the other one was the inventor of the lightning. And that is, of course, Benjamin Franklin, and I think it's interesting what he had to say about learning, teaching. And of course, if you look at the third statement, ask yourself, is this still the profile we like to have in our students and our young military officers? Most of them are always tried when they are told to make decisions, oh, I don't want to make a mistake. And that is a question of mindset. And that's also one of our many points we have in the back of our minds when we run our model or when we advertise it. So the value of playing games. Don't lecture, play. And again, I don't have to rummage through my own brain, which there's a lot of empty spaces there, but history provides a lot of stuff regarding those four areas. Let's start with this guy again. I think once you are involved with him, he haunts you. He's always there. And I think the young, or all these guys who thought about to separate from motherland, they knew if we want to become our people, or our people to be the sovereign, they better be educated. And one thing he said is, why don't we have the people learn chess? It's not just because of these foresight, circumspection, caution, but I think his idea went deeper, saying, we want people, if they want to be the sovereign, that they are capable, as Phil just said, think by yourself. And that's one way to train that and to offer that is to play games. On this guy, also sometimes he's called Plato. So this guy, a long time ago, he found out that this is a possible way to get into know the other peoples much better in a much shorter time. And then there he is again. Maybe he or George Bernard Shaw said this. And I think that is, at least for me, a very, very important statement. And ask yourself, when you start to say, oh, no, not tonight, it's, oh, I will not do this, this is too demanding, or then, okay. The brain loves it. If you reduce your amount of oxygen, you're changing the rest of the brain cell. That's great. And then you're just sitting there. And yet you're just still alive, but you're not longer functioning as the brain asked for. And last but not least, so with these four areas already in mind, education, empathy, mindset, and thinking, I want now to elaborate on three areas. And again, this is not just born out of our team or the Gypsies alone, but we mainly derived some ideas from this guy, a German professor, name is Dietrich Dörner, and amazingly enough, it was even translated. So his book is called The Logic of Failure, Recognizing and Avoiding Error in Complex Situations. And this guy dwells on how to do, to find out why people act as they act, what's behind that. And he's also saying by playing simulations and games, that is a very effective tool for each of us to recognize what happens when you start acting in complex situations. Now the first thing is what we call the inherent potential and power of games. So if you have a game box sitting on your table or a DVD where a game is on, even if you don't use it, it's inherent, it's already there. And here are some points of it. So whatever the game is, it provides structured frameworks and the consequences of interconnected decisions. It's just waiting there. It is already in the box. And of course, each game has a topic. So there are coordinates for orientation. If you take a war game simulation or an economic one, whatever, or even an abstract game, there are coordinates for orientation. In the game of chess, it's just you have those big square made of 64 squares, you have different units, how they can move and so on. That is an orientation there. And then, of course, Phil also mentioned it, there is always each game because it's a model, so it is a reduction. So whatever it is simulated or the topic of a game is, it is reduced in much more simple structures. And of course, they're notional because they actually do not exist. You cannot just buy, I want to buy 6 kilos of this and this game element. You buy the game and then you have the rules and the components. And that's where the notional structures are embedded in. And of course, each game provides rules and clear facts. There's no way around it. But they also create or offer chance and spontaneity. And this unique combination turns games into platforms for creativity and imagination, up to the point where you not just play a game, but you feel this urgency. Now, I want to change it. I want to put in this. So your first step is always to make games more complex. Believe me, I've been there for a couple of years. And then as a wise guy said, now let's reduce. And that's much harder than adding complexity. And of course, a game is a game as such. The players are the protagonists and their behavior. And even in a solitaire game where you always have this tendency, nobody's watching me, so I turn this dice roll from a 1 to a 6 in order to continue. It tells you a lot if you accept that or not. And then of course, this is what games also provide. They're always holistic within their little microcosmos. They never try, no simulation tries to simulate reality. It's always a model of perceived reality by the game designer. And of course, the moment you play it or you take it, you have always this kind of offer or chance for alternative interpretation of data. That is when it comes to, what does it mean when I roll a 6 or what does this table mean? We always keep asking the students, okay, what is behind this table or what is behind this dice or what happens if you roll a 12 with 2 6-sided dice, what is that? And then people suddenly think, oh, that is just 1 chance of 36. So it's a very unusual result, but it's still possible and I should have known. Playing a game. So now we open the box. What happens if you really now start to use the game? So there is a combination for you, for the players, because the games unite systematic thinking. Holistic one with linear function thinking. On the one hand, you have simple tables. On the other hand, you have a whole problem to solve, the whole challenge. Win that battle, win that war, whatever. On the other hand, you have very simple linear functional thinking, which is asked from you. And it's no surprise where people tend to go. They just go for the simple things. That's what Dietrich Dörner calls the vertical approach. If you have to design the whole garden for the king, 3 square miles, and after 3 weeks the king asks, where are you? Oh, but 2 square meters for the roses, they are set. That is what mostly happens. So, and this is what playing a game offers you. Question is what the players make out of it. And this was also, I think, as I understood, Phil was mentioned there, you have a chance for, within this cosmos of a game, to find the best value, which is not, should not be taken, that is the solution for the real world. As I learned in Dayton, war games do not provide answers, but they offer insights. And it's left to the players to take it or not. And this is maybe one of the most important things. The games always have quantifiable factors. There are tables, there are numbers crunching, what have you. Even hidden in a, if regardless if they're hidden in a black computer program box or in tables and the rules book. But when playing a game, intangibles are transparent, like looking your opponent in the eye is different than looking at the screen. And if you have this experience that you say, okay, now I have to roll a dice, what result do I need? Oh, it would be bad for me if you roll a 6. And then you just toss the die and there is a 6. The moral impact on the other side is incredible. And that is also, at least for the military, very important. Because by playing a game, you learn, or you have the chance, to reduce situations to the core elements. Can you enforce it? No. It is up to the student, the players themselves, to find out exactly that. And our experience says the first thing that is always forgotten by the students as players, what was the objective? When do I win the game? So if you play a game about the 55 days of the siege of Peking, if you ask after 3-4 turns when it runs well for the defenders, they say, oh, we have to get out of the walls and hunt the Chinese forces outside Peking. And then you have to ask them, what was your main job? Your job is to stand and defend the city or this part of the city until the relief force comes up. And you are not there to kill as many Chinese as possible. And of course, fitness program for thinking. Because if you do something outside the scope of the game is merciless because it doesn't care. And this is leading to this Platon statement, if you like it or not, if you have it, if you watch what the other players do and how they behave, you will see their thinking patterns. And sometimes it's kind of an abyss, sometimes it's very surprisingly good. Last point, just playing a game for itself, that is of course not the objective, but you sooner or later develop a strategy. So what is the link between strategy and playing a game from our point of view? So, we saw a picture of Clausewitz, who has actually never been involved in a real battle. He always tried to, but he was always condemned to be a witness or sitting on a desk. But he had this kind of timeless statement. So I think nobody will disagree with that, but then the moment you put them on the testbed and they're playing the game, yeah, remind the people where they are, and they will find out, we never did an assessment of what we have done. So that results in blind actionism. Like we asked one time at Crenville, where we said, okay guys, after a couple of game turns, by the way, who's currently winning the game? Dead silent in the room. Nobody knew. So this is a longer thing. So that is our idea, we agree with that. We offer by this education training model, we give the students a chance to improve their perception regarding strategy. What is important? What is the real thing of the enemy? Or what is your own intention? And so on and so on. And this is of course one of the many things that are completely neglected. Rather, sooner than later, the adversary is always kind of dumb idiots standing somewhere, never moving, never acting, and then they're totally surprised when they start to move and act. But our plan was brilliant. Unless this is one of the traps that Dietrich Dörner continues to point at. And I would love to have some politicians here, especially German politicians, when it comes to that. The energy problem in Germany, oh, that's easy, just put some wires in. What is electrical power? What are the parameters of electrical power? Oh, I was never good in physics in school. That's not an answer. And this, of course, is the kind of thing we always try to tell people, our students, change your patterns. Never say, oh, that was successful, that's it for the end of the life. Then your brain turns into a Maginot line, only to be overrun by a much smarter opponent. So, taking all this together, when you play a game, you have those six areas of opportunity. And that's where we put our project in and said, okay, we can use this for our project, which is the Command Control Leadership Competence Improvement idea. And of course, if you talk about competence, then the question is, what do you understand by competence? There are countless or numerous models of it. We'll have two. The one is used in our still draft version of the German Armed Forces doctrine, capstone document. There you see the technical acquirement and the mental skills. The main part are the capability to abstract, to reduce and substitute. And there are, of course, character traits. And there we are back to the other guys I mentioned at the beginning of this presentation, empathy. Very, very important. How to measure it? Impossible, but it is a valid factor when it comes to your command control competence. And here's the second model, which is used at the Academy in Hamburg. We call it the competence cube. There you see those four areas of competence and eight capabilities. This provides you 32 drawers, and now you can set up your ENT training course saying, oh, I want the guys for social competence, especially for the capability to motivate. Or when it comes to personal competence, how is your own stress handling? Things like that. And that allows you as a starting point to set up, and as Phil also mentioned, you always have to select your game. Don't leave it to as an element of chance. You have to provide the appropriate game. And that's the final two observations. Some of you guys, of course, know it, but we still insist on this model. So if you have a growing dynamic and perceived opaqueness, then you have this kind of unpredictability and complexity. And each of us draws a red line here. And everything beyond that line is perceived as chaos. And what we tell to try to make our students understand, don't try to move that red line or get to the other side of the red line. No, stay there and prevail in there. And this can be done by changing your patterns deliberately, not just as a reaction of what the opponent does. Last but not least, this was taken from one of our other projects from 2010 in the Joint Air Power Competence Center. You see the shared situation awareness, shared situation understanding, and empowerment. If you don't know what's going on and you have nothing to use, that is blissful ignorance. Hello, politicians again. It's still Chatham House rules, right? But I signed this. And, of course, this is very hair-raising. If you have no idea what's going on, but you have a lot of power, oops. On the other hand, I think most of us sometimes feel that way. We know what we can do, what we have to do, but we do not are empowered to do it. And, of course, a perfect situation for what this project, the Master Principle of Mission Command, was aiming at was, okay, that is coherent efficiency. And as a German, that is the idea of Führer mit Auftrag. It cannot be translated. Mission command comes close to it, but it's not complete. That is what we're after. And that finishes this kind of short introduction to our idea. Don't lecture, play. thanks for your attention. And now we have leg stretch, and then we go into the discussion, or is it directly?
We've got plenty of time.